Good afternoon, Your Honors. If it may please the court, Jennifer Fisher on behalf of 84 Lumber Company, registration 36590. We're here today. The basic facts of this case are that 84 Lumber Company was a wood framing subcontractor on a project up in Winter Park, Colorado. It involved the construction of six buildings of townhouses and condominiums. For a majority of that project, 84 Lumber Company was a subcontractor to a company called Colorado Regional Construction, CRC for short. CRC was a general contractor for a majority of that project with Telemark Associates, the appellee here being the developer owner. 84 Lumber made a claim for approximately $103,000. The amount was generally some unpaid invoices and retainage for some buildings that had been completed. The trial court found that 84 Lumber was entitled to the $103,000, but that it was entitled to that amount only from CRC, that its claims against Telemark and Valley for a trust fund violation and for unjust enrichment were failed and was rejected by the trial court. As I had said earlier, CRC was the general contractor for a majority of this project. The time that's relevant, however, is after they abandoned the project, which was
in CRC was the only person or company with whom your client had a contract.
Yes, Your Honor. That's true.
Okay.
CRC in the spring 2008 timeframe abandoned the project after the Telemark had canceled $182,000 in checks to it. And it's undisputed at that time CRC abandoned the project. The trial court found that the project at that time was about 80 to 90% complete. It was at that time that Telemark came into the project and finished the wrapping up of the project. In part, they hired another contractor to do some of the punch list and warranty work. But the part that's relevant here is that there was still approximately $519,000 owed to CRC at the time of abandonment of the project, and Telemark took complete control of those funds. It decided which subcontractors to pay with those funds, which, you know, contractor to hire to finish the punch list and warranty work. And in this case, it actually withheld some of those funds for itself, claiming offsets against its contract with CRC. It's at this time frame that Telemark was controlling the $520,000 in funds that 84 Lumber asserts that Telemark and Valley, as the individual in control of financial decisions for Telemark, became subject to the Colorado Trust Fund statute.
You had a perfectly good remedy pursuant to the Mechanics Lien statute, did you not? Prior to all of this?
Your Honor, it's true that 84 Lumber could have filed a mechanics lien, but the trust fund statute specifically applies to subcontractors whether they file a mechanics lien or not. So even though that was one remedy available to them, by not taking or using that remedy doesn't preclude them from having a
claim. Using that remedy gets you to the owner.
It would have.
Directly, as opposed to trying to come through the general.
Well, we are making claims against the owner directly for unjust enrichment and for the trust fund statute. I agree with you in that the mechanics lien would have been another way in which to do that, but 84 Lumber's decision or failure to not file a mechanics lien doesn't preclude it from having a remedy under the trust fund statute. Back to the trust fund statutes, without question, as this goes to your point, is that 84 Lumber is a subcontractor entitled to protection of the trust fund statute. The trust fund statute is not reliant on them filing a mechanics lien. The relevant question here is whether Defendant Valley and Telemark are subject to the obligations of the Colorado Trust Fund statute. Defendants rely on just the semantic argument of the pure language of the trust fund statute, which says that it applies to funds dispersed to contractors and subcontractors. However, it's undisputed in Colorado that there is at least one exception recognized for merchant home builders, which is a seller of a house who both owned the property and constructed it. So in essence, they're an owner developer. And that the Colorado courts have found that those merchant home builders have obligations under the Colorado Trust Fund statute. That's analogous to the facts that we have here. At the time that CRC, the general contractor, abandoned the project, there was still 10 to 20% of the project to wrap up, and that wrap up was being done by Telemark. It was obtaining the construction funds, it was paying subcontractors, it was finishing construction, it was doing the warranty work, it was doing the punch list work. It was—
Excuse me. You said that they're analogous to a merchant builder, but a merchant builder would have entered into the original contracts with the subs and all of that to begin with, would they have not?
They would have, but I think—
Then this is a owner who is simply trying to finish up a project. Do you want to address that, how someone who was forced into that position by the failure of a contract with the general then becomes this other creature, the merchant home builder?
I think the policy of the trust fund statute is to protect subcontractors, and it's to protect subcontractors until the end of the project. Essentially, when CRC, the general contractor, left the project, to find that the obligations of that additional $500,000 to hold those in trust for the subcontractors didn't flow anywhere would be to go against the purpose of the trust fund statute, which is to protect the subcontractors until the completion.
Well, the statute starts off, mm-hmm. all funds dispersed to any contractor or subcontractor under any building construction so on contract, and imposes a trust on those funds. Those are funds paid presumably by the owner to the general contractor or directly to a subcontractor. That didn't occur here, did it? And funds you're seeking are funds that remained in the possession of the owner.
Well, they're funds that came from the construction loan to the owners. If we had assumed that CRC was still in the project, the construction draw would have come from the bank to the owner to the general contractor. Here, because there was no general contractor to then disperse funds to the subcontractor, the owner was acting as CRC would have been if they remained on the project in dispersing those remaining $500,000.
But they were neither a contractor nor a subcontractor, were they?
I admit they were not, but Colorado has recognized that merchant home builders are subject to the Colorado Trust Fund, even though the word owner does not appear in the statute. And I'd argue that despite the language of the statute, that the policy behind the statute requires that we treat Telemark here as we would treat a merchant home builder, which is, although an owner, they are functioning in that capacity as a contractor, subcontractor, in dispersing funds and in, you know, finishing the construction. I mean, most importantly here, in dispersing the funds.
Did you discover any case where the person who was trying to be held liable under the trust fund statute is in the position that your defendant is here, that where they are simply an owner who steps in because they have no choice but to step in to finish a project? I don't recall in looking at the material cited in the briefs that there's any case like that. The cases all relate to someone who is involved in the contracting process in one way or another.
Right, and I don't think that there are any Colorado cases on point. I have looked, and like you said, I had not found anything in my research either. There is one thing, though, I would like to address in your question of whether I found any cases where an owner had to do this. Here, Telemark canceled $182,000 of funds it had forwarded to CRC as a general contractor. So it wasn't a case where the general contractor just disappeared. The general contractor abandoned the project because the owner stopped fulfilling its obligations to the general
owner stopped because they had reason to believe that the funds were not being properly applied.
I would agree with that statement.
I don't know if that's true or not, but they apparently believed that.
Right, and I agree with that statement, that the testimony at the trial court was that the owner believed that they had reason to stop the funds to CRC, but it doesn't change the fact that they did stop the funds to CRC, and that their active participation in not paying the funds to CRC and having them abandon and stepping in and wrapping up the project made them alter the course of this project. This isn't simply a case where CRC, you know, received money from the owners and we didn't get paid and now we're trying to get money from Telemark. They actively changed the course of this project by canceling those funds and getting involved in the direct disbursement of those funds.
Didn't the trial court find that they, in their contract with CRC, they had the right to take that step of making the two-party checks or making payment directly to the subs?
I believe that they did have that right under the contract. I don't think that that changes the fact that they actively managed $500,000 in funds and that my client wasn't paid, even though it was a subcontractor who's protected under the trust fund statute.
But doesn't force CRC off the job that they enforce their contractual right to make payment in a different way. What I got from your prior statement was that you felt they forced CRC off the job by stopping payment on the two checks.
Well, I think that their actions caused the abandonment of CRC. Whether it was a contractual forcing off, I don't think that was the issue, but I do think that it's undisputed that their actions caused CRC to abandon.
Isn't it also correct that the owner paid out the full contract price?
I would dispute that statement because they had $520,000 of contract funds available to them. And of that, $166,000 of what they claim payment to CRC are actually back charges. And it includes things like liquidated damages. It includes some punch list type work. Of that $166,000, they sought judgment against CRC for $67,000. So the amount we're actually dealing with is about $100,000 that they kept for themselves for offsets. The trust fund statute specifically says that the trust funds have to be paid to subcontractors. There's no privilege carved out for use of paying your own expenses. So I think that $100,000 that they offset for liquidated damages and for punch list work and warranty work was actually in violation of that trust fund statute because it was their own expenses versus payment to subcontractors.
Does it matter that it appeared that they were trying to pay 84 Lumber but not getting any information from 84 Lumber about what was owed?
That statement was made in the answer brief, but that wasn't actually a finding of the trial court.
Are there facts to dispute that?
The exhibit that Telemark submitted to the trial court by their own number shows that they believe that 84 Lumber was owed $105,000. The ultimate claim was $103,488. So they were aware at the time they were making their payments of what 84 Lumber's claim was. So I don't think that even if they didn't have every document, they were fully aware of the amount of 84 Lumber's claim. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I'll reserve some time for rebuttal.
Good. You have 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Brian Ray, entering an appearance for Charles Bailey Jr., as well as Telemark Associates Limited, LLC, the only two defendants that participated in the trial itself. Your Honors, you are hitting on the exact points of which we believe the trial court correctly ruled in favor of the defendants in this matter. And the first reason is because although 84 Lumber claims the trust fund statute was designed to protect subcontractors, instead the trust fund statute was more designed by the Colorado legislature to protect owners from the situation of being forced to double pay.
Let's take a look at that double pay.
Thank you.
You know, wasn't the money that they claimed due at the end of the project as opposed to at some point earlier during which you would have given CRC the money for them?
There's no dispute that the funds to which 84 Lumber claims to be owed were in fact retention, 10% roughly of their overall contract. That's not in dispute. But they weren't even entitled to retention under their contract with CRC for a number of reasons that there's ample evidence in the record to support. The first of which is that they failed to provide warranty items. Section 4 of the contract with CRC and the owner indicates final payment is not due until there's owner acceptance of that project. They failed, this is 84 Lumber, not CRC, which we can talk about all of the defects CRC had. 84 Lumber themselves failed to provide material supplier releases. They failed to provide their own conditional lien waivers and lien releases to the owner. They also failed to complete undisputedly punch list and warranty work. Their own witness, Chris Young, indicates that he received our letter, which was Exhibit P in the trial court in October of 2008, identifying these defects. Chris Young testified he went to the job site himself, saw that the cedar shingled siding wasn't corrected.
Did the court make any findings that, you know, that 84 Lumber would not have been entitled to payment until these things occurred?
No, I don't believe that the court looked at that issue, because the only contract issue between 84 Lumber and CRC was by default. CRC did not participate at this trial because they were in bankruptcy. But importantly, 84 Lumber went to Judge Brooks in their bankruptcy petition, in the adversary proceeding they filed, and represented as part of their case in chief that Telemark had paid in full. And now,
is that binding on this action?
I don't believe it's binding, but it also shows, if you look at Joel Hayes' testimony in the actual trial court itself, he conceded he had no good faith basis, and I quoted the exact language in my answer brief, no good faith basis for the allegation that Telemark had not paid in full. And in fact, the trial court found, and I cited in the answer brief, they gave the trial court, Judge Hoke, gave the appellant the full benefit of the doubt. Every single credit and back charge that they're contesting, the judge gave them credit for, and it equaled $35,000. And given that we had overpaid $67,000, the court ruled in both the oral ruling from the bench and in denying the motion for reconsideration that, even assuming every argument they said, we've received payment in full, or we have paid CRC in full, and in fact more than was due. And that's a specific...
Oh, actually, you didn't pay CRC. You decided to pay other subcontractors and contractors that CRC wasn't paying. You guys were deciding to pay, you know, these other people to over the limit of the contract, but CRC didn't pay them. You didn't pay CRC, and CRC didn't distribute. You decided where to distribute.
Unfortunately, we did that, and we exercised our right in CRC's contract to issue joint checks. Section 4 of that contract allowed joint checks. And Judge Hoke found, if Telemark had not done that, that there would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars that would have escaped going to the subs directly if we had not stepped in and done that accounting reconciliation. There was testimony to support that finding by Lisa Medillo, who was the very employee of CRC, who testified that CRC was submitting forged pay draw applications, was saying that they had paid certain subcontractors when in fact they hadn't, and moving funds from one project to another, which shows one of the points that I believe Judge Roy was making, is that there was ample evidence at the time that CRC abandoned the project to show that CRC had not been paying what they had represented on certified draw applications to the bank and to the owner. In fact...
But we're talking here about payments made after CRC is off the project.
Correct.
And you are and Mr. Bailey and the company are making these decisions and choosing who's going to be paid and who not.
We did choose who was going to be paid and who was not to be paid, but that was no different than what had happened before. Keep in mind, the owner of the project is always monitoring invoices and is always looking at the backup that its general is submitting. The mere fact that now the crook, the criminal, CRC, was off of the job site didn't mean that Telemark was not paying its full contract price to CRC. In re Helmke, the bankruptcy opinion in 2008 directs this court to look what the res of the trust is. It's not every penny. 84 Lumber argues it's every penny that comes onto the job or into the construction project that gets held in trust. The sales proceeds, for example, the construction loan. That's what In re Helmke says. You have to look at what trust funds are to be held in trust. And the answer to that is the contract amount the owner has with the general. Otherwise, this court's ruling would require the owner to be a guarantor of every subcontractor. It would eviscerate lump sum contracts in the construction industry completely if you were to hold otherwise. The owner is entitled to rely on its general lump sum contract with the general contractor. And once that payment is made in full, its obligations are satisfied. That's also this court's opinion in Red Iron in 2008. I recognize it's not a Supreme Court opinion, but was...
almost.
Good enough for me, Your Honor. And it was importantly decided after the confusion, I will say, the Supreme Court created in Lewis versus Lewis when they said the particularized analysis in DCB is limited to the landlord-tenant context. The Red Iron Court said, well, while that's true, you look at the law of restitution, or rather the restatement of restitution, and the law of remedies by Dobbs, that says the mere failure of payment by some third party is not enough to create that cause of action for unjust enrichment. If it were, the owner becomes the guarantor of every subcontractor, and you become the merchant home builder, as you were indicating, entering into those direct contracts with those subcontractors. And so Telemark, the judge found, was actually the equitable hero in this case. Sure, we made a profit. Every owner's entitled to. But we were the hero by stepping in when we saw the CRC was absconding trust funds. The real trust fund case is when the general contractor, CRC, runs off with the funds. And the owner's forced to pay not only the mechanic liens, but also the funds they'd already paid CRC.
Where is it written that the owner's entitled to a profit? You really sort of caught my attention when you said that. Where is that written anywhere?
There's certainly no case law that specifically says an owner is entitled to every penny.
I think so.
But that's the economic model that our economy and capitalism is founded upon, Your Honor. And without allowing the owner to make a lump sum contract, and this goes back to the concept of the construction industry, and that's why owners do lump sum contracts, because they're able to acquire property, determine in their own head what they think reasonable construction should be, reasonable price, that is, submit fair bids, and look at those bids, and then enter into that contract. This court should uphold the contract party's reasonable expectations of those contracts. And that's exactly what this court does by not rewriting the trust fund statute and putting an owner when it says contractor and subcontractor, and when it says for which such disbursement was made, that specific language in the trust fund statute, it means that you have to identify the funds that are to be held in trust. It's not every penny. It's the funds for which such disbursement was made to the general contractor.
How is it that you decided to pay some subcontractors, maybe all of them, except 84 Lumber?
Our entire goal was to determine what was owed under CRC's contract remaining when they jumped off the job site. Exhibits I and J were the draw apps that said there was $519,000 left. Once that happened, we hired CRC's former employee, Lisa Medillo, to reconcile this. She came in-house to Telemark. We made contact with all of the subcontractors to give us the invoices and the backup. Guess what? We heard from every single one, except for 84 Lumber. It's undisputed that we didn't hear from 84 Lumber until a face-to-face meeting happened in October of 2008. It's further undisputed that we didn't receive the backup, the actual invoices, the drop tickets, the delivery receipts, until 40 days before trial. Before trial, I filed a motion to limit it. I promise you, I lost because Judge Hope wanted to hear the evidence. And she said, 84 Lumber went radio silent on us. And so we did every effort to determine who was due what, with the general principle, Your Honor, of determining what was owed under Telemark's contract with CRC. That was the driving force, as the court has indicated in Red Iron, as the statute in 127 specifically, the language provides for which such disbursement was made. And so that was the driving force. And so we got the invoices from the subcontractors, determined whether or not this was due and owing. And we determined that 70%, and there were spreadsheets that back that up, Exhibit H specifically, in the trial court, that showed. It wasn't like we arbitrarily picked 70%, Your Honor.
No, I was just going to say, what about that $100,000? Shouldn't it have been applied to a subtractor before it was applied to an offset against CRC's wrongdoing?
No, because keep in mind the overall principle is what is owed under the contract with the general contractor. And every penny of that was backed up, and there were witness after witness at the trial court about those credits. Don't think we just submitted spreadsheets and Judge Hope said, I agree with you, Telemark. Those funds are, you had a right to the offset or the credit. credits, rather. We have a right to the liquidated damages under the contract. It wasn't stuff we made up. These were legitimate expenses that Telemark hired a different contractor. They try to suggest that Telemark stepped into the shoes of CRC and then finished the project. That's not what happened. We hired Peregrine Constructors to come in and finish the job. That's Exhibit Triple H in the trial court, which shows it wasn't an owner being the general contractor. There was someone separate. We had to pay Peregrine, for example, $89,000 of punch list in warranty work that CRC should have done and would have been required to do in their contract. So those credits and those offsets were all looked at by the trial court, are subject to a clearly erroneous standard by this court. There's ample evidence, and I can go through, like I just did, some of the specific instances of where they failed to complete this stuff, but there was a laundry list of things. And so as a matter of law, we did nothing, or as a matter of law, we were entitled to those offsets. And they're trying to suggest that everything changed in April of 2008. Telemark's role in their basis as the owner changed in 2008. Telemark did nothing different in its role in 2008 than it did previously. The owners, just like Telemark, obtained the construction loan. They were still disbursing the construction loan on a month-to-month basis. They still looked at the invoices from the subcontractors, just like they looked at the invoices from CRC. They looked at every draw application before April 2008. They went to the job site to confirm and verify that work was done. That was no different. The only difference is that instead of paying CRC only, they paid joint checks to CRC and the subs. And again, fortunate they did, because those subcontractors got paid. And 84 Lumber would have gotten paid had they not gone radio silent. And Joel Hayes, their key witness, admits that they did nothing to come back to the job, to fix their warranty, to provide us any backup, to give us any substantiation. Remember the position Telemark's in. They don't get the invoices from their subcontractors every month. They don't get 84 Lumber's invoices, okay? So when those go to CRC every month, the general contractor. So when CRC abandons the project, Telemark's left with a blindfold on, with a simple schedule of values that CRC gives to them and says, this is what's owed. That schedule of values doesn't even list the subcontractors by name. So Telemark's blindfolded trying to do this reconciliation, and without cooperation and backup from subcontractors themselves, it'd be like pin the tail on the donkey trying to figure out exactly what was doing owing these people. And that's 84 Lumber's fault. They had, as you eloquently mentioned, Judge Roy, a mechanic lien remedy. And you're right, that doesn't eliminate their trust fund claim. But it does show that the trust fund statute was designed to protect owners. And the inequitable conduct for this unjust enrichment claim has to fail by the wayside when you look at what Telemark did. They saved the project. They saved, from the testimony of Lisa Medillo, hundreds of thousands of dollars from being put into Mark Gill, who was the principal of CRC's, pocket. And they sued him in adversary proceeding for those same violations. They recognized that Mark Gill stole that money. And Telemark, the other reason unjust enrichment doesn't work as a matter of law here and as a matter of fact is because, and this will be my final point, is that specifically there's undisputedly zero evidence of any contact between the owner and 84 Lumber until October 2008. There's no inequitable conduct when you don't have any contacts. Thank you.
Your Honors, Mr. Ray said several times that they saved the project. It's notable here that whereas Telemark and Valley may have saved the project for themselves, 84 Lumber still did not get paid here. If payments had gone to CRC in the normal course, we may not be here. The other thing that I want to address is that Mr. Ray started off and again said later that it's questionable whether 84 Lumber was entitled to the $103,000 that they claim. The trial court found that it is. It found by a preponderance of evidence that it did prove that it was entitled to $103,000. So whether there were questions in the trial court about warranty books being provided and the like, the fact remains that the...
But what about counsel's argument that 84 Lumber went radio silent or whatever? I mean, I appreciate what he's trying to say.
Yes. There's several pieces. One, as I think I had mentioned to Judge Daly before, is they knew what the claim was. Second, the testimony of Lisa Medillo, who had worked for CRC and then went over to Telemark after CRC abandoned the project, stated at one time they thought that they did have the paperwork. The other thing that has not come up in this appeal, but was very relevant during this time frame, was that Telemark insisted that they weren't going to pay 84 Lumber for construction because of construction defects. Those claims were proven to be untrue at the trial court, and many of them were dropped before the case even went to the trial court. So this isn't just an instance where 84 Lumber said, you know, or didn't give them papers. Mr. Valley and Telemark had approached them and said, you'll take 70% or we're not going to pay you. And that was what a lot of these settlements had been done, and that was in the trial court record as well. And that was basically 84 Lumber's response, is we want everything that we're owed. We don't want to take your settlement for 70%. If we have to take this to court, we will. But that's not particularly radio silence. The other two things I had wanted to address were, Mr. Ray talked about the risk of the trust and how it's not a broad concept. One, the merchant home builder cases do specifically address both construction loans and sales proceeds. The other case to keep in mind is AC Excavating v. Yale, which was issued by this court in 2010. And that was a case where it was a merchant home builder who put his own funds into the company to pay expenses. And the court said, no, once those funds were in the company, you had to pay subcontractors prior to paying expenses. That's how broad the trust fund is. Parker v. Rio Grande specifically states that the policy of the trust fund statute is first to ensure subcontractors are paid and second to protect homeowners from having to pay twice. Thank you.
We thank both counsel for their arguments and their briefs. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.